episode number 6-1 of the Mitch and Neil's Bulls Show. You're looking at the Chicago Bulls from a fan perspective. We're not experts. We're not insiders. We're not journalists, but we are two guys that love talking about the Chicago Bulls. I'm Mitch, the man sitting right across from me, the newly hitched Jay Nils. Nils, tell the people how you really feel.
Guess who's back? Back again. Nils is back. Tell a friend. What is going on, Mitch? How you
nothing,
doing?
Nothing much. Nothing much. We are podcast 3 of the starting 5. 5 podcasts in 5 days. Getting ready for this Chicago Bulls season, this championship run.
Who do we got? Who do we got tonight or today?
Today we got my boy Brian Crawford.
Yes, sir.
One of the best Twitter followers just in basketball Twitter. Love that guy. He runs the Outside Shot blog for NBC Sports. He's also a contributor to Red Eye. Formerly, he was a writer with Slam Magazine. So this guy definitely knows his stuff, knows his way around the Bulls, knows his way around the NBA, and he's always got some really interesting opinions.
He's going to give us a little history lesson, too, I feel like.
Yeah, we won't have to pull out any stuff from him. We won't have to, like, string him along. He's going to get going. He's going to tell it like it is. So I'm really excited to bring him on the podcast.
What else do we got going on before we get to Brian?
Nothing much. We're obviously, if you've been listening for the last 2 days, we've been promoting the heck out of the trivia night that we're going to be doing next Monday, the day before the season. What do we call that? Opening day eve?
Yeah, regular season's eve.
Regular season's eve at State, 8 p.m. Or excuse me, 7 p.m. Excuse me. We're going to be doing our Bulls trivia. We were just going over our rounds now.
Do you want to tell the listeners, maybe give them a little preview of what to expect?
You know, it's going to be 5 rounds of trivia. Obviously, like I said before, we're going to be doing everything from Benny the Bull.
A lot on the line here.
To Boozer. Yeah, it's a lot. I want to see who gets the $500.
I'm taking wedding gifts and putting it into the pot.
Yes. Yeah. Just push it into the
pot. I'm pretty much spending my honeymoon at State.
Yeah. It should be a good time. So we previewed yesterday the and now round. That's going to be one of our rounds. It's going to be 5 rounds of trivia. The and now round is where I'm going to just kind of describe, kind of like Ray Claywood, a player, you know, 6'6" from the University of Michigan.
Can I do those announcements? I feel
yes,
like I
you
do
can.
Pretty good.
Yeah. We can throw the Alan Parsons project on to get the
which you hate.
Yeah. Listen, I don't hate it. I just think that it's time to move on.
You know what's interesting about that? Sorry, I'm going off on a tangent here, but I was at the Bulls game last night.
You were.
And they kind of stepped up their music game. I feel like someone's been listening to our podcast.
Yeah, I mean, we've been a big proponent of getting rid of the YMCA.
There was no YMCA.
No Chicken Dance.
There was no Black Eyed Peas.
No Ace of Base.
No, I mean, they do this new thing, which got me really hyped for a preseason game. They had Kanye's Power playing. And Kanye does this little thing where he's saying, you know, let me hear you clap. And the entire stadium starts clapping. And it got me hyped.
Well, it's good that we've moved into 2010, 2009 at the UC. Maybe we could take those next couple of years in a second.
Sorry, you were saying, talking about trivia.
No. You know, we previewed the and now round. We're also going to do, and we'll preview it, a school days round. So what this is going to be is we're going to be looking at the Bulls in college. So if you want to do a little studying up, that'll be one of the rounds.
You just threw a curveball at all the people that have been studying for the last few weeks.
I'm sorry, man. We gotta change it up. We're gonna be doing the Bulls stuff. We're gonna be doing NBA stuff. It's gonna be Bulls focused, but we're gonna, you know, change it up a little bit. So
be prepared. You don't know what we're gonna throw at you.
Listen, just get ready. Get your mind right. It's $500.
That's
like
true.
We gotta make
you
earn
it. Right. Let me ask you real quick before we cut to Brian. What's more unsustainable? Derrick Rose's 78 points in 80 minutes or doing a daily podcast? Because you're burnt out right now.
No, listen. This is a night job. This isn't a day job. But I'm committed to the Bulls. So, you know.
I appreciate you filling the void while I was out and attending, I guess, more important matters.
Yeah. All right. Well, we'll be back in 1 second. Brian Crawford's going to come on, talk to the Bulls show. Yes, we're talking in the third person. Talk to the Bulls show about all things NBA. So we'll be back in a second. Bulls show.
All right. right, back on the Mitch and Nils Bull Show, we are welcoming the lead writer for NBC Chicago's Outside Shot Bulls blog, a contributing writer for Red Eye, Slam, CS in Chicago, Brian Crawford. Welcome to the show.
Thank you, man. Appreciate you for having me.
How's everything going?
Can't complain, man. Ready for the preseason to end and ready for this regular season to begin.
We're just about 6 days away. 6 days away, of course. We are recording this on Tuesday, October 22nd. You're actually, we're going to call you the man in the middle of our starting five week-long, five pods in 5 days. Appreciate you taking the time to come join us here on the show. And I think we'll start off with a little Derrick Rose talk. Brian, you're quite the interesting follow on Twitter. Some may say a very strong personality. We find you very entertaining. One thing that I remember, you know, following you at Brian Craw 4D is that you took the pretty strong position of siding with Derrick Rose last season when he made the decision not to come back towards the end of last season. How vindicated do you feel about that now that he's back and returning arguably better than ever?
I mean, I don't really think it's vindication, man, because, you know, I'm not one of those I told you so type of people. You know, it was just, you know, my whole thing with the, you know, with the Derrick Rose injury is that, you know, it's a very, very, very serious injury. Like an ACL injury is very serious, you know, and it's not something that people can just automatically come back from. You know, people look at, you know, the Adrian Peterson situation and, you know, because he's the one guy that, you know, that was the exception to the rule, you know, people kind of held Derrick to that standard. And, you know, I just didn't think it was fair. You know, I feel like, you know, if he would have come back last season and he wouldn't have been, you know, the Derrick Rose that we all remember, and people would have said, you know, people had something to say about that. So, you know, I felt like for the way that he plays and, you know, the style of game that he brings to the court, that guy needs to be 100%. Like, he can't be any less than 100%. I mean, he can't go out there and, you know, have any doubts or, you know, anything like that. He doesn't need to have those problems, you know, in order to make him the great player that he is. So I was all for him coming back just because I know how serious the injury is. And, you know, it really takes time. And one of the things I remember that Dr. Brian Cole said is, yeah, you know, he can be fine physically, but the mental aspect, that's the biggest part. You know, a player has to feel like they're ready. And if they don't feel like they're ready and if they rush back and try to get out there too early, you know, they can end up hurting themselves. I mean, you look at RG3, Robert Griffin III. You know, he hadn't hurt himself, thankfully, but, I mean, we're already in, like, you know, week six. And, you know, he still doesn't look like the player that we remember at Baylor or, you know, the player that he was before he first got hurt. You know, so these are all, you know, big things, and I don't think people really took them into consideration. I mean, at the end of the day, I felt like people wanted Derrick Rose to come back for their own reasons and not his. I mean, it's not like, you know, he was going to come back and then we were automatically going to compete for a championship or, you know, knock off the Heat. No, that wasn't going to happen. I mean, you definitely didn't want him to come back in the playoffs before he was ready. I mean, you know, if he didn't come back in the regular season, the playoffs is definitely the wrong time to bring him back. So, you know, I thought, you know, he did good. You know, he did right by himself, you know, taking the time out to get himself fully healed and, you know, fully prepared. And as we've seen in the preseason, it was the right decision.
You know, you talked about what people feel. I don't think it really matters to Derrick Rose. But how do you think the public is going to react? Do you think it's just the public's going to take him back with open arms? Do you think they're going to be mumblings about, man, he could have came back before? You think all is forgotten? What have you seen, you know, talking to people on Twitter, things of that nature?
I mean, you know, I mean, I really feel like it's like, you know, water under the bridge. I mean, I saw a guy from the Chicago, I think it was the Tribune or something like that. He basically, you know, wrote an open letter, kind of like an apology, you know, and, you know, I really feel that, you know, that's kind of where people are with it. It's like, yeah, I wanted him to come back, but I mean, if you look at him now, you know, he looks great. And, you know, like most people, I feel like, you know, they'll act like they never even said it, you know, and it's not like Derrick is going to be requesting, you know, an apology from these people. But I mean, at the end of the day, you know, it was their opinion that he should have come back. But his body is his knee. Only he knows how he feels. Only he knows, you know, the pain of going through rehab every day. You know, only he knows about the soreness that he has, you know, while he was training and working out and after games. Only he knows that. And so, you know, I feel like we can't just automatically assume that we know better than a player, or, you know, we can't automatically assume that, you know, we know when someone's body is ready just because the doctor says so. I mean, yeah, the doctor cleared him, but the doctor didn't have to go out there and play. The doctor didn't have to, you know, run full speed and, you know, attack the basket and jump into somebody and still try to finish. Didn't have to do all that. And, you know, if Derek didn't feel like he was able to, you know, come back and be D Rose, yeah, I mean, I think, you know, he did right. And, you know, following the people that doubted him, you know, that's their loss. You know, they, you know, I don't think those people really, you know, understand, you know, the type of injury this is. And like I said, I think the Adrian Peterson thing plays more into it that, you know, than a lot of people will admit. But it just wasn't the right decision for him. What was right for AP wasn't right for Derrick Rose. And Derrick Rose has to do what's right for himself, you know, for the Bulls and for his family. And that's the only thing that should matter. And that's the only thing that should count. That's the only thing that we should care about as fans.
Absolutely. And right at this point, all of that is well into the past, given the 5 preseason performances from D. Rose have shown him, like I said, probably being better than ever right now. What would you say is the biggest difference in Rose's game right now, based on what we've seen? And, you know, more generally, how have the Bulls changed as a team?
You know, I don't know if I really see any big difference in his game. The difference that I see is just like how he is physically. You know, you can go back and, you know, look in pictures from the 2011 season and, you know, when he got hurt, he's a lot bigger now than he was then. Just physically, like just the upper body strength. He may move a little bit quicker, may move a little bit faster. I really can't tell because it still looks the same to me. But physically, I think that's where he's made the biggest difference. As far as the Bulls, you know, I wasn't really like big on the things that they did over the summer, especially like the signing of Mike Dunleavy, because I, you know, at that particular point in time, I felt like it was kind of a rehash of that 2011 squad. But, you know, as I've seen them, you know, and watched them play and, you know, seen these guys up close, you know, everybody has, you know, made a commitment physically. Like all these guys came into training camp and media day, like the biggest I've ever seen them. Like, you know, everybody looks like they got stronger. Taj Gibson looks bigger. Joakim Noah looks bigger. You know, Carlos Boozer came in. He didn't look bigger, but, I mean, he came in great shape. Marcus Teague has gotten bigger. Even Tony Snell has put on some weight since he got drafted. So, you know, I think the biggest difference in this team is just the physicality that they're going to play with. You know, they're still the same team as far as, like, you know, the skill and talent level of the players, but I think that physical aspect is what's really going to set them apart this season. I mean, they're not going to, you know, take these lumps and bumps and bruises and get pushed around from anybody. I mean, they're going to come at people, and physically I think they'll be able to do it this year.
It's interesting you say that for a couple of reasons. One, you know, you have this big physical team, at least aesthetically, but they're also a team that we've seen so far in the preseason. Of course, this is a lot based on Derrick Rose's ability that is able to get out in transition. But secondly, I recall from last spring that you believed that the front office needed to revamp the roster and bring in another superstar alongside D. Rose in order to compete for a title. Based on what you've seen so far, based on what you've seen in training camp, do you still feel that way? Do you still think this roster needs to be blown up?
Actually, that wasn't accurate. I don't think I remember saying that they needed to bring in a superstar. I know last season I felt like they should have kept Nate, and I still stand behind it. I think that's, you know, I mean, I think if they fall short anywhere, it'll be because they didn't re-sign Nate Robinson. I don't think they necessarily needed another superstar. I just think they needed someone who could, you know, put pressure on the defense. Like, you know, just imagine if you got, you know, Derrick Rose out there with Nate Robinson and they're playing, you know, the Miami Heat, and LeBron is guarding Derrick. Who's going to guard Nate? You know, Nate can still get his own shot. So I think, you know, I think having another score out there, someone who can, you know, shoot the ball from long range, put it on the floor and get to the basket and create their own shot is what I think they're really going to miss. I mean, as far as the blowing up of the roster, I mean, I like it. I just feel like, you know, like most of the other teams in the NBA, they're going to run into a situation where, you know, they're going to have to, you know, trim some salary because the salary cap, you know, the new rules are very, very serious. And, you know, nobody wants to write those big luxury tax. I mean, especially not Reinsdorf. I mean, we already, you know the whole moniker about the financial champions and things like that. So, you know, he's definitely not going to, you know, spend any extra money on top to, you know, try to contend just to keep these guys together. So, I mean, I don't know if, you know, a lot of Bulls fans even know or realize it, but this is probably the last run that we're going to see from this core. So, you know, they're just pretty much going all in at this point.
Do you think, how far do you think Jimmy Butler is away from that kind of second banana guy who can take the pressure off Derrick Rose, a guy you have to worry about if you pay a lot of attention to Derrick Rose?
You know, I like Jimmy Butler, like, as a starter. The issue that I have with Jimmy Butler is he has to score. You know, he has to, you know, get out of that mindset of, you know, not shooting the ball when he's open and not attacking the basket. I mean, it looks to me like he's still kind of trying to figure out his place and, you know, still kind of figure out where he can get his looks from and his shots from. But, I feel like he can score. I actually had a conversation with him the other day, yesterday, the shoot around I went to, and I asked him just point blank. I'm like, yo, listen, do you think you could score 4 points a quarter? And he was like, yeah, that's 16 a game. I'm like, that's all you have to do is score 4 points a quarter. If you can score anywhere from 16 to 20 points a game, then, you know, y'all going to be tough to beat. And, you know, he said that's the way that he thought about scoring. I'm like, that's the only way that you should think about scoring. He could get 4 points in a quarter, you know, and he just has to, you know, kind of switch his mindset from being that defender to, you know, getting into more of an offensive mindset. And it'll come. You know, he's still a young player. This is, what, his third year in the league and his first year as a starter. And, you know, he's going to get that because Derrick Rose is going to command so much so much attention that he's going to get a lot of open shots. And those guys really do scream on him all the time about not shooting the ball when he's open. So, you know, eventually he's going to get it. But right now I just want to see, you know, more of it from him. But when he gets there, then I think that'll be like a turning point in the season for the team because, you know, now, you know, you've got a guy who's great on the defensive side of the ball, but who can still get you, you know, 10, 12, 14, 15 points, you know, in addition to what Derrick is giving you, in addition to what Luol is giving you, Carlos and Joe King. So, you know, that's a lot to deal with, and, you know, that's a lot for defenses to have to handle. But, you know, if he's a guy that's out there passive and not looking for a shot, that makes the other four guys on the court easier to guard. And that's going to create more problems. So, you know, once he gets into that offensive mindset, I think the Bulls will be fine. It'll take a lot of pressure off of everybody.
So you mentioned earlier how this could be the Bulls' last run with this core. And, of course, part of that core is Luol Deng, who's undergoing contract year, you know, still has that will likely enter free agency at the end of the season. Realistically, what should the Bulls do with Luol Deng?
You know, I don't know. I definitely don't think they should trade him. They definitely shouldn't do that, not to trade them. I mean, you want to give this core at least, you know, one season to, you know, try to see what they can do. They obviously got robbed with Derrick getting hurt. But you definitely don't trade him. As far as, like, at the end of the season, I don't know, man. I mean, I like Luol Deng. I'm really conflicted on him. Like, you know, I feel like, you know, he's the longest tenured Bull. He's been here for a very long time, and, you know, and I like to see him around because I know definitely Tibbs loves him. But then at the end of the day, you know, this guy's going on probably his last big contract, so he wants to make some money. You can't hold that against him either. And, you know, like I said, with the salary cap situation and with the CBA being what it is, you know, you already got Derrick making a ton of money. You got Taj making a ton of money. You got Joe King making a ton of money. You know, it just, you know, it essentially comes down to being a numbers game. And can the Bulls afford him, and do they feel like, you know, if they do want to keep him, is it worth, you know, going into luxury tax territory for him? Because now they'd be a repeat offender because they were in the luxury tax last year. So if you're a repeat offender, the tax penalty increases. So, you know, these are all of the things that the front office has to think about. Would I like to see him around? Yeah, but I mean, is he going to take a hometown discount? Probably not. And, you know, it'll be one of those situations where he'll have to move on. I mean, he was a great Chicago Bull, and if they win a championship, I think that changes the discussion a little bit. But if they don't, you know, I don't think he'll be back.
See, that's really interesting to say. I agree with you. I couldn't see the Bulls breaking the bank for him. Do you think the Bulls have somebody on the roster? Do you think a Tony Snell could step up? Do you think there's players out there that could help the Bulls maintain a high degree of play if they don't have Luol Deng?
Well, I think the Snell draft pick was kind of like, you know, kind of like insurance for, you know, when Deng leaves. You know, he's the same, you know, same size player. You know, he's still raw because he's just a rookie and getting into the NBA. But, I mean, his defensive, you know, upside is huge. I mean, this is a guy that played high school basketball with Kawhi Leonard. So, I mean, he knows the defensive side of the game. He can really, really, really shoot the ball. Like, I don't think people really know how good he can shoot it. But, you know, that's probably how he's going to make his money in the league. So I think when they drafted Snell, they drafted him with the idea that, you know, Lou Alden won't be back, and that's kind of like his understudy. So, I mean, I think, you know, the Bulls probably already have a plan in place, you know, and in mind of what they want to do, you know, to get rid of Lou Alden. They bring Morodis over, the Easter Bunny, you know, the guy that we've been talking about for years, but nobody's seen him. You know, he comes over. So, you know, I mean, I think they have kind of like a long-term plan in place, and it may or may not include Lou Alden, and chances are it probably doesn't.
Wait, are you talking about the new Dirk Nowitzki? You didn't hear he was Dirk?
Allegedly. I mean, I've seen him play a couple of times, but I don't – yeah, I mean, I don't know about that Dirk. I mean, that's a lot of pressure.
I heard he was a new age Larry Bird.
I heard he was 7'3".
I heard he was coming over soon, and I've been hearing that for years.
Brian, so the big talk on at least my timeline, the Twitterverse today, was the release of the NBA GM survey. And, you know, there's been a lot of talk about that, as well as ESPN's NBA rank from the past few weeks, neither of which really showed the Bulls much love. You know, we had Miami and Indiana remaining favorites in the East. Derrick Rose was listed behind 4 point guards. It seems kind of silly to analyze and critique opinions, but, you know, just how much did these troll boards get it wrong? You know, how many point guards realistically are better than Derrick Rose right now?
Well, you know, I'm not as upset about the whole Derrick Rose thing, you know, simply because, you know, a lot of people don't realize, I mean, we're 2-3 weeks into the preseason already, and, you know, these things come out way before guys even start playing. And, you know, with Derrick Rose, I mean, he's coming off an ACL injury. Nobody, quote-unquote, really knew how good he was going to be. So I think he came in, ninth? I think he came in, like, ninth or something like that. You know, I wasn't that upset about it because, you know, you look at, you know, guy coming off of ACL surgery, you know, you got Tom Thibodeau with a track record of running guys into the ground and maybe Derrick Rose get hurt and things like that. Like, I can understand the mindset about that. You know, I don't really have a problem with that. The Kobe thing, I kind of took issue with it. I didn't verbalize it on Twitter, but, you know, my whole thing with that is, you know, yeah, he's got an Achilles and, you know, whatever. But when he comes back, do you really think there's going to be 24 players better than Kobe Bryant in the NBA? That's a hard question. You know, that's a hard pill for me to swallow. Like, I don't know if I can say that. So, you know, yeah, you know, it is silly to critique people's opinions, but I think, you know, a lot of times these opinions get masked as fact, and, you know, people ride with these things. And I think, you know, I think that becomes more of an issue when, you know, when it gets to a situation where people want to be the smartest guy in the room, everybody wants to be right. You know, it's just an opinion. Like, I don't care about being right or wrong. You know, I might get some things right. I might get some things wrong. I may say something that's off the wall. But I just say what I got to say and keep it moving. I'm not trying to be the smartest person on Twitter. I'm not trying to be like that super basketball analyst dude. Like, I enjoy basketball. You know, I talk about what I see. You know, I go off my gut reaction. I like stats, but I don't live and die by them. You know what I'm saying? I got a different perspective of the game. And, you know, I know that may not be popular with some people, but that's just kind of how I view it. That doesn't make me wrong. Yeah, I miss. We all miss. But, I mean, I'm not, like I said, I'm not trying to be that dude. That doesn't matter to me. Now, the whole thing with the Pacers, I kind of take issue with that. And just based off of the fact that how do you automatically vault the Indiana Pacers past the Chicago Bulls with no history or track record, you know, just based off of 1 7-game series with the Miami Heat, and now all of a sudden they're better than the Bulls with Derrick Rose coming back, but the Indiana Pacers couldn't beat the Chicago Bulls with Derrick Rose? I don't understand that. Like, that just makes no sense to me. I had somebody on Twitter say, well, in 2011, you know, the Bulls lost to Miami 4-1, and the Pacers pushed them to, you know, 7 games. So how could they not be better? Okay, well, let's take a look at that. Chris Bosh missed the entire round with an abdominal pull, if I'm not mistaken. Dwayne Wade was basically playing on one leg. Like, his knee was literally taped together. You know, he had like maybe 1 or 2 games in that series, and he had to take shots just to play well. You know, that Heat team was, you know, they struggled with injuries like in the Eastern Conference Finals. And, you know, the Pacers, they just had a really, really fortunate run. I mean, they had no competition in the Central Division whatsoever with, you know, Derrick Rose out. And the Bulls only came in like, 4 wins less than them in the regular season? I think they won 49, the Bulls won 45. So, I mean, and then they played, who did they play? They played the Atlanta Hawks, and I forgot who else they played in the playoffs. I mean, teams that they were very easily going to beat. So, I mean, they had an easy run through the division, had an easy run through the playoffs, ran into, you know, Miami Heat team that was kind of broken up. But nobody looks at these things. The only thing they look at is, hey, they pushed the Heat to seven, so they're automatically the best team. You know, I think, you know, it's a lot of overreaction. I think the Indiana Pacers are a very good team, but they have to prove that last year wasn't a fluke. And with Derek back, you know, and the Bulls looking the way that they've been looking, and, you know, and the way the team's put together, I don't know if they're better than the Bulls. I mean, they just have to prove it on the court, and I don't know if they can. So that's the only thing that I really have a problem with. Derrick Rose coming to nine, I'm okay with that. But this Pacers thing over Chicago, nobody's giving the Bulls any love. I mean, it's like they've almost been written off almost. I don't get that.
How would you compare the Pacers to the rest of the contenders in the East? Or do you even see them as contenders? And I'm talking more about, you know, the Brooklyns of the world, the New Yorks of the world. If you kind of have Miami and the Bulls on that first class, on that first tier, where does Indiana fit in?
I put them right behind them. I would put them behind Miami and Chicago, but in front of Brooklyn. I still think they're a very good team. I didn't say that they weren't a very good team. I just don't understand when and where they passed Chicago. You know, with Derrick Rose coming back, you know, the Bulls coming back healthy, you know, and health is going to be a key issue for any team in the NBA, but especially with the Bulls. But, I mean, if the Bulls are healthy, the way I look at it is this. I don't care how good the Indiana Pacers are. At the end of the day, they do not have a player that's as good as or better than Derrick Rose, and they don't have a player that's as good as or better than LeBron James. That makes a difference. Those guys are superstar players. They are difference makers. I like Paul George. I don't think he's at that superstar level yet. I know Danny Granger's coming back, but, I mean, this guy's making $14, $15 million. He doesn't even start. He's coming off the bench. That's a tough pill to swallow, you know, for a guy who's a star and all-star, you know, played on Team USA, won a gold medal in the World Games. I mean, that's the, you know, they got some issues over there that they got to work out. Not anything bad. I mean, they have good, bad problems, I guess, if that makes sense. But, you know, still, that, you know, at the end of the day, the Bulls and the Heat have a trump card. They have an elite superstar level talent player that the Pacers just don't have, and that makes a difference.
So the two superstars you mentioned, of course, are Derrick Rose and LeBron James. Can D. Rose be as good, if not better, than LeBron James this season?
Oh, I don't know about that. I mean, you know, I like Derrick Rose a lot, but I think, you know, LeBron James is just, I mean, the guy is like the king of the stats. I mean, he's going to dominate all of the stats. I mean, he's 6'8", 260. Nobody in the NBA is like that. I don't think he can be better. You know, I mean, I hear all of the, you know, the MVP talk and, you know, things like that with Derrick Rose. Could it happen? Yeah. You know, if it did happen, I mean, look, at the end of the day, if you say that anybody's better than LeBron James, you're going to be killed for it. And I happen to think that LeBron James is the best player in the NBA, but I think Derrick Rose is right up there. I don't know if he can be better, but, you know, he could definitely be in that conversation.
You have an interesting opinion, I think, about stats and advanced stats in the NBA. You mentioned it a couple of minutes ago, and I feel like, you know, the Twitter community is very pro stats. Tell the listeners a little bit about your opinion and how you think stats are kind of misplaced in basketball analysis nowadays.
I mean, I just don't think it's the end all be all. You know, I mean, you know, there are people out there who base their entire basketball conversation around stats. I mean, like, you can't even talk to a guy about what you saw on the court. You know what I mean? It's always about, oh, you know, look at this guy's stats. Look at that guy's stats. Just like the whole, I don't know if you guys saw it today, but I had a situation where I was talking about Chris Paul.
Yeah.
And, you know, every single year, Chris Paul is ranked the best point guard in the NBA. But every single year, there are other point guards in the league who win more games than him, who take their teams further in the playoffs than he does. And he's out in the first round. Typically, sometimes, I think last year they got out, but in the second round or something like that. I mean, Chris Paul has been in the league like 9 years. He's been to the playoffs five or six times. He's gotten to the second round only twice. You know, and, you know, I feel like,
you talk,
no disrespect. Was that?
No, I'd say you had a kind of similar conversation, I could think, a couple of days ago about Carmelo Anthony.
Well, Carmelo is different. You know, Carmelo is like one of those guys that doesn't win at all. I mean, like, you know, he wins like a lot of regular season games, but no team with Carmelo Anthony has ever really been considered a contender to win anything. I mean, except for the year they made it to the Western Conference Finals, you know, and they had a really good chance. I mean, but beyond that, nobody's checking for Carmelo, just like the, you know, they're not checking for, you know, Chris Paul. Derrick Rose and the Bulls, yeah, Derrick Rose is back. Guess what? The Bulls are contenders. Tony Parker, he's still the point guard for the Spurs. Spurs are contenders. Russell Westbrook, when he's not hurt, I know he plays with Kevin Durant, but he makes a difference. The Oklahoma City Thunder are contenders. I feel like if you're going to be the best, if you're going to be the best, if people are going to call you the best, it can't just be because you have the best stats, man. You got to have something to show for it. You have to have something to show for it. You know, and the best players, the best in it, if you're the best at anything, you should be that difference maker. You know, you should be that guy that can at least, and like I said, I'm not saying that Chris Paul should contend for a championship. I'm handicapping it for him, all right? You don't have to contend for a championship. Just at least get to the second round consistently, more than you have. That's all I'm asking. You have to be able to give me something tangible other than, you know, we'll look at his efficiency rating and, you know, look at his field goal shooting. I mean, listen, no. If that's your thing, if the efficiency is your thing, that's cool. Give me the less efficient guys that win. That's because at the end of the day, that's all that matters. Wins and losses, that's stats too.
How do you separate the contact? How do you separate the teammates? What would you say to somebody that says, well, a Russell Westbrook has a better cast, say, this player has a better cast, that player has a better cast, you know, Carmelo's never played with teammates? How do you respond to those type of arguments?
I think it's a very good point. And, you know, and I'm not going to say that that's invalid. But, I mean, there have been guys in the NBA that have been called the best at their position that have won with less. I mean, you look at Isaiah Thomas and the Detroit Pistons. Little guard, you know, won two championships. They didn't even have a top 50 teammate. Got one Hall of Fame teammate in Dennis Rodman, but past that, none of those guys were top 50 guys in the NBA. Look at Steve Nash. Those Suns teams, they didn't advance very far in the playoffs. I think they won like 60 games every single year, you know, but I would argue that Steve Nash probably had less talent around him and on those Suns teams than Chris Paul has right now. You know, now, they have Vinny Del Negro. We know Vinny Del Negro is terrible. We saw it for 2 years. So, I mean, you know, I can almost give him a pass for that. And I feel like right now with Doc Rivers and the team that they have, this is it. Like, the excuse train for Chris Paul stops right here. Like, you got a Hall of Fame coach, a coach that has coached, you know, three Hall of Fame players, been to two finals, won a championship. There's no more excuses for you. You got to get it done, or that's it. If people want to call Chris Paul the best point guard in the NBA, I have a problem with that. I would give it to Tony Parker, simply because Tony Parker has won. You know, he's coming off a finals win. He's got more championships, into the second round quite a few times, been the leader of his team at least what the past three seasons, been the best player on his team. So I would give it to him. You know, I'm not saying that Chris Paul isn't good. I think he's a great point guard. I think he's the best pure point guard in the NBA. But it does not change the fact that there are other elite point guards at his level that has done more than him for that particular team, and he hasn't.
Do you think that there's a such thing as a guy who's just a winner?
Yeah, absolutely. Absolutely. You know, and people don't put any stock into that, because the one thing I noticed, especially, you know, with basketball fans and, you know, analysts, the way people talk about the game now is, you know, if you can't put a number around it, then it doesn't count. You know, if you can't, you know, somehow quantify it in some way, then you can't use it. But, I mean, there are just some guys who, you know, who are just inherent winners. I mean, guys you put on the team, and as long as they're on your team, you know, you got a good chance of winning. You know, you look at those old Houston Rockets teams where, you know, Sam Cassell and Robert Horry, those guys were rookies, man. And they came in and they helped the Rockets, you know, win the championship. Some people just had that. Like, they just winners. They just know how to win. You put them on the court, you're going to win. Rajon Rondo, he may not be able to shoot a 15-foot jump shot, but you put that kid on the court with anybody, and they're going to win, because you know he's going to go all out in some kind of way. He's going to figure out to help his team win. So, yeah, I mean, I do believe in guys that are winners, you know, and, you know, I do believe in guys that are, you know, very good, but just don't have that it, I guess you can call it. But yeah, I mean, that's a real thing. Just because you can't quantify it doesn't mean it doesn't exist.
Well, Brian, I think we'll leave you with this. You know, you speak about winning, and obviously expectations are through the roof for this upcoming bowl season. Give us a final prediction for this 2013-14 season. Where do you see how do you see the season ending for the Bulls?
I got them winning 58 games in the regular season. I got them going to the NBA Finals. I feel like they can get to the Finals. And if they get there, I don't think there's any team in the West that can beat them. I honestly, and I know I just talked a lot about Chris Paul, but I got the Clippers coming out of the West. If the Bulls and the Clippers, you know, make it to the Finals, and give me the Bulls in six games.
So where are we popping bottles in June in Chicago?
Absolutely, man. Absolutely.
We'll be partying up in Grand Park.
Yeah, man, I'll be out there. You know that.
Hey, well, Brian, we appreciate your time. Thank you so much for joining us. Make sure you check out all of Brian's work over at NBC Chicago's Outside Shot blog. Follow him on Twitter, like we said. Great follow, very interesting guy to follow, very entertaining. That's at Brian, C-R-A-W, the number 4-D.
If you tweet at him, though, be prepared.
What was that?
If you tweet at him, though, be prepared. Don't tweet
man.
Him.
I'm not that mean, man.
You're trying to disarm all those keyboard gangsters.
Man, I just don't do disrespect, man. I just come on Twitter to talk my trash and keep it moving, man. But, you know, I just don't do the disrespect. I'm not a disrespectful dude.
Nah, it's all love,
if you disagree
man.
With me, that's cool.
No, I really appreciate it. Maybe you're getting into too much right now, but you know, you have a lot of people on Twitter, and you know, they're promoting their own stuff. They're linking to articles. There isn't a lot of personality on Twitter. There aren't a lot of people that are interacting with fans, having real discussions. I think that's what Twitter is really good at, whether it comes to, you know, basketball or hip hop or something like that. So I really appreciate somebody who is out there, who does have a platform outside of Twitter, obviously as you do, with the paper and things of that nature, but still can interact with folks that, you know, that obviously, you know, aren't as, you know, important or famous or whatever, or has an important job as you. So I really do appreciate that. I think you're a good fellow.
Oh, absolutely, man. Absolutely. I mean, I know people out there hate me, but that's cool. You're still listening. That's all right. Man. I'm all right with that.
Brian, keeping it 100, and hopefully we'll check in with you sometime during the season.
All right, man. Anytime.
All right. Take care.
Yep.